So when I went on sabbatical, I knew that I wanted to visit sacred sites and cathedrals and monasteries and walk ancient pilgrimage paths. But what I didn't fully expect was that I'd also go exploring Unitarian Universalism and how it shows up in different countries and continents. So first, I researched it in the UK while I was visiting my mother, which I'll talk about next week. But then I went looking for Unitarian Universalism in Paris. And after that, at the European UU conference in Saarbrücken, Germany. And from the stories of the people that I met there from all over Europe, I found a constellation of practices, fellowships, and churches that really expanded my thinking about how we do spiritual community. And it made me curious about what it takes to keep a liberal religious tradition alive when it's not the dominant culture around, and also what it takes for people to keep showing up when the odds are against it. When I was creating my sabbatical itinerary, a colleague suggested that I reach out to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Paris. And as sometimes happens on pilgrimage, the timing seems almost uncanny. They needed a visiting minister in April 2026, the exact month that I had planned to be in France. And then they told me that they were celebrating their 40th anniversary and asked me to lead a workshop and preach that weekend. I know, amazing, right? And the dates happened to fit perfectly. So I went to explore continental Unitarian Universalism. And I'll never forget walking into that 40th anniversary celebration in the basement of an office block in Paris. Is there anything we can do about this interference that we keep hearing? No. Okay. Just go with it. So I went into this 40th anniversary in the basement of an office block in Paris, and almost immediately someone came up to me and said, "Sherry Hansen says hello." Our very own Chalice is Sherry Hansen. And I did a double take, as you might imagine. And then I remembered that Sherry had once been deeply involved in the Paris Fellowship and still stays connected with them through online meetings and newsletters. So she knew I was coming there. And it was one of those moments when the world suddenly became very small and our faith suddenly feels really large. And so much for wondering where Reverend Nika was. I wonder if you put a mark on the map. You kept my secret. Oh, thank you, Sherry. So the Paris Fellowship began as a spiritual home for expatriate American Unitarian Universalists living in Paris in 1986. And today it includes people from many different countries and backgrounds, mostly connected in some way to American UU congregations. They don't meet in an ancient church or a sacred meeting space, as you might expect, but in a social hall or gym near the beautiful Sacré-Cœur Cathedral in Montmartre, just below. And what struck me was their dedication. They have no minister, they're completely lay-led, and they hold services only once a month, usually with visiting ministers from all over Europe. And still, they've built and maintained real community, right, Sherry? You can attest to this, much in the way you all did for the first 40 years of your existence. They have a pastoral care team and a weekly meditation group, museum trips, educational events, and social gatherings. But it takes real effort from many volunteers to keep it running. And of course, it takes a willingness to set up the room, to invite speakers, to make the coffee, because no one else will, and ask month after month, how shall we continue to be a community of conscience here? Their president, Peter Jarrett, described the fellowship as a place for people who care about ethics, social trends, the environment, and all things that UUs care about. In other words, it's a place where people who could easily stay isolated in their silos at home choose to come together, And in Paris, Unitarian Universalism felt like a home for people whose lives had crossed borders, people who may not share nationality or even language or childhood religion, but who shared a longing for freedom, meaning, community, and moral calling. And their services are all in English. So that was the first lesson. When spiritual community isn't easily accessible, it becomes something that we need to decide to create and keep practicing, because without it, something essential in us will go unfed. And I know those of you who've been here decades know what that kind of dedication is about, keeping spiritual community going when all there is are you putting in all your effort. So after Paris, I went on to Saarbrücken, Germany, just across the French border, for the European Unitarian Universalist Conference, which happened to be the week immediately following. So again, perfect timing. And the EUU is a network of Unitarians and Unitarian Universalists from across Europe. And twice a year, they gather in retreat. Now, for some people, this is not an extra denominational event in the same way that we might go to GA or so. This is their only spiritual community. In fact, I met a woman from Spain where there is no UU congregation. So twice a year, she travels to the EUU retreat to be with other UUs, to worship, learn, sing, and share, and to remember she is not alone. Yeah, imagine that. Imagine your congregation being something that you have to travel across countries to reach. Imagine belonging to a faith whose nearest gathering might be hundreds of miles away. Now, in America, we often talk about church attendance as a matter of convenience. Do I feel like going today? Is the sermon topic interesting? Oh, am I too tired? Is it worth the drive? Is she gonna say something interesting? But in Saarbrücken, I met people for whom staying connected to our faith required huge effort and trust that it would be meaningful gathering in community. It required travel, intention, planning, expense, commitment. And that taught me something too, because we often assume that religious community survives because institutions are strong. But sometimes it survives because our longing is strong. Our longing for conscious community. Our longing to be part of a collective that makes a difference. Our longing to explore the mystery of this existence in community and hear many different people's ideas. And the EUU retreat was full of people from small UU fellowships in Paris, in Brussels, in Amsterdam, in Prague, Basel, and Germany, most of which were about 30 to 40 people strong, along with individuals from places where there is no local congregation at all. Now, some of these groups are lay-led, some meet once or twice a month, some are made up largely of expatriates, and some include Europeans who have found their way to Unitarian Universalism because they were drawn to the ideas of freedom of conscience, reason, social justice, and spiritual openness. And that's when I noticed that European UUism isn't a smaller version of American Unitarian Universalism, but rather a slightly different expression of the same longing. The sense of community amongst these people who meet twice a year was palpable, and many had been attending for 20, 30, even 40 years every year. And it moves location, always in Central Europe somewhere, but it moves location every time. And then I connected with the Germans at Saarbrücken. And I learned that in Germany, there are actually several different expressions of Unitarianism, congregations in Frankfurt and the surrounding region, some with deep roots and some newer. And what surprised me is they don't really appear to talk to each other, or collaborate. Each seems to think that their particular approach to liberal religion is the right one. Now, I am 100% German, and I'm not going to say anything about that. But I recognized a cultural tension within me there. And I found that quietly heartbreaking. Here were communities small enough that they needed every ally that they could find. And yet the very thing that defined them, freedom of religion, no creed, no authority telling you what to believe, had somehow become a wall between them rather than a door. And one of the presenters was Reverend Pascal Schilling, a young pastor from the free religious movement in Germany, just outside Frankfurt, a tradition built on the same principles that we hold, freedom of thought, belief, and conscience, with roots going back to the democratic uprisings of 1848. And he spoke about the International Association of Religious Freedom, the IARF, founded in Boston in 1900 with Unitarian roots, and its founding dream of uniting what the founders called pure religion and perfect liberty. Pure religion and perfect liberty. People who believed that faith and freedom belong together. Now, for European Unitarians, these are not abstract ideals. They are questions that arrive with history attached, the history of state churches that punished dissent, of borders drawn to exclude, of silences enforced by regimes that knew exactly how to use religion as a tool of power. And when people in that room talked about religious freedom, they were talking about things that their grandparents had survived. Of course, one of the high points of my time there was meeting and learning from a Transylvanian Unitarian minister, Reverend Maria Rakas. And until then, I knew the basic history about Transylvanian Unitarianism, going back to the 16th century, as you were reminded in our story today. I knew about Ferenc David, or Francis David, as we know him. And I knew about the Edict of Torda from 1568, one of the earliest declarations of religious toleration in Europe. And I knew the famous saying often attributed to Francis David, "We need not think alike to love alike," because that really is the core explanation of our faith. We need not think alike to love alike. But hearing a Transylvanian minister speak about her own living tradition was really different. She explained that Transylvanian Unitarianism is largely Hungarian-speaking, located in what is now Romania, in a region where history has shifted borders and identities and languages more than once. And she spoke of the Hungarian minority in Transylvania and of villages where one valley might be Unitarian, the next Catholic, and the next Reformed. She spoke of growing up in a place where she had heard Hungarian on the streets from the local Unitarians, even though the country surrounding her was Romanian. And she shared that in her tradition, people don't usually decide to become Unitarian. Their parents decide for them. They are born into it. It's almost like being born Jewish as a culture, except in this case, it's Unitarian. How many of you here were born into a Unitarian family? One, two, three of us. Don, Mary Ellen, and Barbara. But the majority of us aren't. And I was struck how different that is from our American UU experience, where so many people arrive after leaving another tradition or nothing. We're used to conversion stories like, "I was raised a Catholic," or "I was raised evangelical," "I was raised Jewish," "I was raised with no religion." And I walked into a UKU congregation and finally felt that I could breathe and be myself. Anyone identify with that? Oh, now we have lots of hands up. But in Transylvania, Unitarianism is often not discovered. It's inherited. It's in the family, it's in the village, it's in the language, it's in the school, it's in their baptism, their confirmation, their marriage and funeral rituals. It's woven into the whole arc of their lives. She described children being baptized as infants, then confirmed around age 14 when they have their first real moment of choice in this faith. And then she described holding communion four times a year with bread and wine, shared from the same table, not because they believe exactly what other Christians believe that the bread and wine symbolize, but because it remembers Jesus' teaching and embodies the unity of community. Some people, she shared, may only come to church those four times a year, but they come for that communion. Because the point is not only theology, the point is belonging. The point is that we eat from the same bread and drink from the same cup, from the same chalice. And we are one Hungarian spiritual community in Romania. She spoke about Sunday school, about summer camps and Unitarian high schools, and she told us a wonderful story about the church and school in Kolozsvár. For 100 years, she said, the Unitarians didn't have a church there, but they had a school. And later, when the church building was in danger of collapsing, someone saved it by placing supports between the school and the church. And she said, the church is standing because of the school. And that was one of the most beautiful things I heard, because the church is standing thanks to the school, which is so appropriate for our reading special collection today. Because it's a great metaphor, I think. Our faith stands because we teach it. Our faith remains because we pass it on. Our faith continues because children are not an afterthought. Our faith endures because someone passes on the stories. Someone teaches the songs. Someone explains the symbols. Someone gathers the youth. And someone says, this belongs to you now too. Carry it forward. In our American UU congregations, we sometimes worry about children and youth as a programmatic issue. Do we have enough families? Do we have enough volunteers? Do we have enough classrooms? But Transylvanian Unitarianism reminded me that religious education isn't simply one ministry among many. It's how our faith survives and how we carry the story forward if we do it right and really instill the value of this faith in our children. Reverend Maria also spoke about their theology. And again, I was struck by both the difference and the kinship among us. Transylvanian Unitarianism is much more explicitly Christian than most American UU congregations are. They read from the Bible every week, and Jesus matters deeply to them, but not as God, not as a sacrificial savior sent to die for human sin. She described Jesus as a teacher, much in the same way we talk about him, as a human being who shows us how to live, how to love, and how to become better people. Maria shared that they don't believe in original sin, and they don't focus on hell. They care less what happens after death than about how we live with one another now, which I think is something that we do too. And when asked what Transylvanian Unitarians share with Unitarian Universalists, she said something like this: Life is the most important thing we have. How we live, how we love each other, how we act toward one another. There it was again, different language, different theology, different worship, different history, but a familiar center. This life matters. Human beings matter. How we live together matters. And love matters. Love at our center. She also spoke about their symbols. Like us, they don't use the cross as their central symbol, and they use a chalice. But they also use an important symbol which depicts the serpent and the dove, drawn from Jesus' teaching to be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. She said that for Unitarians, faith and thinking must go together. Interestingly, many Transylvanian Unitarians don't really know much about the EUU folk, and they're more familiar with American UUs because of long-standing partner church relationships, youth visits, and ministers who've traveled back and forth. But Reverend Maria admitted that we're not quite the same. We have a common history, of course, and common values, and that may be the most important lesson of all. But we are not the same across Europe or Transylvania. And yet, my friends, yet there's a thread weaving through us all, and we belong to one another. In our world, people often think belonging requires sameness. But European Unitarian Universalism taught me something else. Belonging doesn't require sameness. And I say that to our wider country, too. Belonging requires relationship. It requires curiosity. It requires humility. And it requires the willingness to say, your way might not be my way, but I want to understand what keeps your soul alive. I'm curious to learn more about you. And this is a lesson I believe we all can use. Because even here in one building, in one congregation, we're not all the same. Some of us come for justice. Some of us come for beauty and the sacred. Some come because they are lonely. Some come because they are angry at the state of the world and need a place to turn that anger into love. Some come for the music. Some come with religious wounds. And some come not knowing what they believe. We're not one thing either. We too are a constellation all in the same space. So perhaps the question is not how do we make everyone believe the same thing. Perhaps the question is how do we keep choosing one another across our differences? How do we stay curious with each other? Paris told me that a congregation can be small, lay-led, and still alive with care and a thronging community. The German pastor taught me that freedom of conscience, the very thing we hold most dear, can divide us as surely as it liberates us. And that people living under social and religious pressure know its weight in ways that we're only beginning to understand. And Transylvania taught me that our faith is older, deeper, more Christian, more cultural, more embodied, and more historically resilient than many American UUs realize. And all of it taught me that Unitarianism and Unitarian Universalism survive not because they're easy. Our faith survives because people
carry it. Parents carry it. Teachers carry it. Lay leaders carry it. Visiting ministers carry it. Youth carry it. Elders carry it. Choirs carry it. Women baking cakes after church carry it. People making coffee carry it. People who travel from Spain to Germany twice a year carry it. People who unlock the door once a month in Paris carry it. People who keep a village church alive in Transylvania carry it. And people who say we need not think alike to love alike carry it. And here at Chalice, we carry our faith too. And maybe that is what I most want to bring home. Our faith isn't guaranteed, my friends. No faith is. No congregation is. No liberal religious tradition automatically survives because its ideas are beautiful. We know many of our ideals are under threat these days. So ideas need bodies. Values need practices. Communities need people. We have to show up. When I went to Europe, I thought I was going to learn about Unitarian Universalism elsewhere. But I actually came home with a deeper appreciation for what we have right here. Because we too are part of this long, fragile, courageous chain of people who have tried across centuries and borders to build communities of freedom, reason, compassion, and love. A faith that began long before us, and a faith that stretches far beyond us, may it be so. And a faith that now rests for this moment in our hands. May we carry it with love and devotion. May it be so.